Good evening. I am interviewing Brian Lambert, and I'm sitting in his house in Garbaldisham, and it's Monday the 29th of August 2011. Good evening, Brian.
Hello.
Can I start with some questions? Where were you born?
I was born next door, about 100 yards away. That was one of the farm cottages, and from there I moved. I think I was about 3 years old, and we moved to Marlborough Farm, a bit smaller was, next to the Broomscot Common, which was my grandfather's house. And I lived there until I was 11, and then I moved down to this house where I've been for the last 46 years.
Oh, that's yeah. Great. Yeah. Was the family in this village for many generations?
Well, I'm the third generation that I've been here. We came from Loddon to Garbaldisham in the early 30s. My grandfather had a farm over there. My father, he was in his 20s when he came to Garbaldisham. They had a herd of milking cows then, and they walked them all the way from Loddon to Street Farm here. It took them a week or so to get here. And one of the chaps that helped my father walk the cows here, he stayed here with the family and lived here all his life in a cottage just up the road.
And so your father's occupation was a farmer?
Yes.
A dairy farmer or mixed farming?
Well, he was mainly concerned with dairy farming, but the family had a mixed farm, yes. Yes, he was mainly, I think he was milking cows from the age of 11. I think he packed up school when he was about 13, and he was, you know, quite an established dairy farmer, self-taught, you know, and we had about 30 cows, but probably we peaked at about 40 cows. Quotas reduced the number of cows until that was no longer viable to sustain cows, but that was, this farm here was mainly the dairy farm at Street Farm here.
Mm-hmm. And why did he leave Loddon? Was there no way he could stay being a dairy farmer in Loddon?
I think they probably wanted to go into arable farming as well as dairy farming, and the opportunity came to to take over a farm down here. I mean, this was the initial farm that we stayed at, but then the other farms came up for rent at a later date, and we took those on as well.
Mm. And what were the names of your siblings?
My siblings?
Yeah. Any brothers and sisters?
I've got two sisters, Margaret Ann and Maureen. Maureen still lives in the village at Smallworth. And my sister, she lived here for a time when she first married, and then she now lives in Hingham. Her husband was worked in the dairy farming business for quite a while, mm-hmm. up until about 3 years ago.
Ah. And which families do you remember in Garbaldisham? Any sort of farming families or families who had ties with this village?
Well, the Cyril Flood, he was the chap that came here from Loddon with us. He was sort of a family friend. He came here and stayed here. Mm. And he, when he was in his 80s, he told me a lot about my father that probably nobody else knew, because he was one of the older people that came here with him, you know. Things such as, because dairy farming was involved a lot of hours, as it does now, but probably even more so in those days. And on a Saturday night, they used to go out about 10 o'clock from here and cycle to Thetford for the nightlife in their teenage years, come home again and sit round the fire here having a cup of tea until 5 in the morning when milking started again. that was the way things were in those days. But there was Cyril Flood. I mean, some of the older families in the village are like the Lings. I mean, they were here for generations and still are. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Milers, they farmed at Hall Farm. We used to help each other out. We used to borrow machinery from them, and they used to borrow from us. You know, we used to help each other out. You know, with the Scarf family, although they're not Garbolas, must hop on us just across the river. I mean, he was a good old friend to us, Bob Scarf, and later David Scarf was, you know. Sadly, they both passed away now. We hired the meadows off, or we grazed the meadows on David's land, the meadows that your project now have recently acquired.
Yeah. And where did you go to school?
At Garbolism School, and then from there to Dis High School, and then I went to Eastern College later on, you know.
And what do you remember about school, particularly the Garbolism School?
Very strict headmistress. Used to stand behind the desk. She used to have her desk standing right in front of the open fire. And we was all sitting there quite cold, and she was right warm. And this big pot of canes. And I never saw anybody get the cane, but she had this big pot of canes there as a threat. But they were good days, and I enjoyed the primary school. I was only boy. With six girls, I think it was, or in my age group. So when I left here and went to the high school, I didn't know anybody on, because that was a separate boys and girls school then. But I enjoyed school all my life. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed school. This school was a very good school. Later on in my life, I've now got two sons, and they both play football at Redgrave. The lady that started the Redgrave team was one of the teachers down at Garbolism School, Mrs. Tyler. Mm. Yes, I mean that's a coincidence, isn't it, that they finished up playing for the team that the teacher started up.
Mm-hmm. And when did you leave school? 18.
Well, age, must have been, about 18, I guess. Yeah, 17 and a half, 18. Yes, 1971, I think it was.
And what jobs did you do as a youngster?
Before I left school, you mean? When from the age of about 11, one of the jobs youngsters used to do harvest time, I used to barrel the sacks of corn from the... We had a dresser. We used to tip the corn into a pit, and then that used to run through a dresser into pulp, into comb sacks. They weighed about two and a half hundredweight each, and with a sack barrel we could wheel them to the end of the barn and take them away from the dresser. And that was my job from about the age of 11 until I guess I started work, really, you know. And by that time we'd got a more modern method of handling the corn. We acquired some grain bins. But that was my job then. And you'd pull fat hen in beet and that sort of thing, stack bales of straw. They were the jobs the youngsters used to do.
Would that be...
That would be summer holidays mainly, that time of the year, you see, you know. Weekends, I did get involved a bit with cows, but that was mainly to see my father more than anything. We lived up at Elborough Farm then, and the cows were down here, so I used to cycle down with him on a Saturday and Sunday. And I didn't really do much, but eventually he let me do a few jobs with the cows. I guess I learnt a lot from just watching, really. How to handle the cattle and work with the cattle.
And how would you describe some of your daily meals that you had as a child?
My daily meals?
Sort of food that you ate.
Well, no, we had roast dinner on a Sunday. That was a regular thing. You always had a bit of beef on a Sunday, but... Other than that, I suppose that'd be perhaps warmed up again on a Monday, or stew on a Monday or something like that. But we used to have stews and dumplings, and you know, they're the sort of meals that you used to have. Apple, you know, a lot of home cooking, apple pies, plum pies, and that sort of thing. The Melba Farm up there was an orchard, so you kept all the apples and plums and things, and made good use of the vegetable garden. Really, most of the stuff you grew in the garden. We had a butcher come round Edge from East Harling, and the meat, you know, sausages, meat and everything was bought from there. And but mainly the vegetables were all grown at home, and the fruit, really.
And So you grew your own vegetables and you grew your own fruit, but the beef and the meat you bought in.
Yes, yeah, we never did do our own beef. Poultry we would. We used to have, I think my grandfather had about 300 lion hens up there. The hens, the eggs used to be packed in a crate once a week, and they'd go away to Sainsbury. Sainsbury's used to have the egg collection round then. But when the lion hens had come to the end of their days, they'd be used for the table. You know, we'd have those to eat, or we'd sell some as well. And then a new crop of hens would come in, you know, for lion the following year.
But you didn't keep hens yourself. You didn't have a few in your own.
Well, my grandfather did, you know, that's where we lived. Yeah. You know, I'm going back to those days. That's, you know, he had 300 lion hens, as I say. So we had our own. We had the eggs from them that we wanted, and then sold the rest.
And how was your house heated? And how were the meals cooked?
We had that would have been an old-fashioned electric cooker. That's how the meals were cooked, and the house was heated by, it'd be two cool fires in the house. You know, whilst you was near the fire, that would be, it'd be quite warm or very warm. If you was away from the fire, that could be quite cold. You know, bath time was in a metal tub in front of the fire. That was quite warm, I suppose, really. But you know, everyone had to move out of the house, out of the room while you had your bath. But that was bath. There wasn't any modern bathrooms in those days.
So you didn't have to collect wood and burn sort of local bits of fallen timber.
Yes, on the farm would supply. You know, that would supply the fire. All the families on the farm had fallen trees for the wood for the open fires. Yes.
So you'd buy
some coal. But, you know, there'd be enough wood around here. You know, during the year, fallen trees to cut up for firewood for probably 7 or 8 families, I guess. You know, something like that. Yes. Yeah.
And what games did you play when you were a child or a youngster? Do you remember any games?
Well, you know, as a youngster, you'd sort of play hide and seek in amongst the barns and things like that, wouldn't you? But football was a big thing, you know. We didn't see much football, but I'd heard of George Best, so, you know, he was our idol in those days, and football was a big thing for me. I used to like. We used to play in the back garden or up back street on the road. Up back street, there wasn't many cars about, so you could play on the road, that type of thing. And the other thing was fishing. I used to, that was a hobby of mine from about the age of 8. I was allowed to go down the river, down at the Flats Meadows and Scarce Meadows, and we used to fish down there. It used to be lovely.
Did you catch much?
Yes, that was full of fish. That was a marvellous fishery years ago. There was a lot of the local lads used to go down there.
Big enough to eat?
Oh no, they weren't. We didn't eat the fish. Put them all back. And there was eels down, everything. Eels, roots, rudd, perch, pike, everything down there. Lovely, that's a lovely river. But it was spoilt when they dug it out in 1968. They straightened the river and spoilt the fishing. But we still had to go down there.
Mm. How do you describe where you grew up? How does it compare with now? Sort of number of houses. You said a bit about there weren't many cars on the road. Shops, pubs.
Well, there was 2 shops here. I mean, I mean when I first started work, well, when I was at school at the Dis High School, I used to work down at the Fox to earn a bit of pocket money weekends. I used to do a bit of gardening work and washing the glasses up in the bar on a Saturday afternoon. And so I, you know, saved a little bit of money up from there. And Christmas time, I'd buy all my Christmas presents from my parents and sisters down at the Mrs. Chillingsworth's shop. She used to have a front room of the house, and that was used to bring, you know, things in, toys and chocolates and things, you know, whatever for Christmas presents. So I used to go there and buy everything there. You didn't have to go to Tesco's or to the nearest town to buy anything. Everything was in the village, you know. Mm-hmm. I used to enjoy looking around there to see what she'd got in for Christmas.
And they all closed, those shops.
That shop closed a long time ago. But we've still got the post office and stores down there. That's a very good village shop.
Mm.
One of the biggest locally, I should think. People from local villages come down here. There used to be a cycle shop when we were youngsters. I mean, your bicycle was your means of getting about when you was a youngster before you could drive. You didn't have to go far to get a tyre. He had tyres, punch repair outfits. He could repair your bicycle if you bent the wheel or whatever. On top of that, there was three garages here. There was, that was Nunn's garage initially, then Mr. Sainsbury bought it, and Ted Edwards had two garages. So there was three garages here that sold, two of them sold fuel, and one of them was just for mechanical work. And sadly, they're all gone now. There's no garages left at all. There are one or two people that do mechanical work in the backyard, if you like, you know, and still, but there's nowhere to buy petrol. That's all Tesco's or supermarket these days. So when you want a gallon of petrol for your lawnmower, you have to run 10 miles up the road to get a gallon of petrol now.
And what did you do when you left school? Before you went to Easton College, did you work or did you go straight to college?
I went straight to college, and then I came home from college at about, I was nearly 18, I suppose, and my father, he wasn't well, so I remember the first 2 weeks I came home, that would be about July time, and that was harvest time. So I was doing my father's, I was helping my uncle milk the cows because my father wasn't very well, and so I was starting sort of 5 o'clock, I think the starting time was then. And then into harvest during the afternoon, I think I'd done about 40 hours overtime the first 2 weeks. that was hard from leaving school, you know, to go straight into work doing that many hours. But there was no sort of time out or anything like that in those days. You went straight to work, didn't you?
And then, did you notice changes as a result of the Second World War?
Well, I can't really quite go back that far, not to the Second World War.
Do you remember any celebratory events in the village? Like, did the church run any outings or harvest festivals, plough events or the Jubilee?
Well, the Harvest Festival was always a big thing, you know. We used to go to church Sundays anyway. Was in the choir and all that sort of thing, you know, up until I was about 14. But, you know, Harvest Festival, you always went to that anyway, and that was a big thing. You used to get your best vegetables out of your garden, you know, and put them in the church somewhere in the appropriate places, and that was a big event, and still is. The Harvest Festival would be same as the Christmas carol service, you know. And the children at school, they have a carol service as well now. That's more of a spectacle than it used to be, I think. The Christmas carol service would be. There was one other one. Was that was that the Queen celebrating her Jubilee, was it? We had a event. We got all the tractors sprayed up and the trailers and that, and we sort of paraded some children around the village and that sort of thing. I remember doing that. But other than that, not really, you know. They're the main events we have. But there have been fundraising events up at the pavilion. We used to have a sort of like a donkey derby up there every year. That was sort of the big event of the village, I should think, you know. That was raising money for the football pitch and the pavilion and the tennis courts, you know. That was another big event.
What do you remember about farming in the area? What crops were grown and animals kept? Was it mostly cattle, or were there any sheep around here?
Well, going back a lot of years, you know, before the war, or even during the war, there was a lot. This was sheep area. The Brickland area was a sheep area. There's a lot of marginal ground here which wouldn't have been ploughed up during the up until the war. You know, before the war, that there wasn't any need. You know, the sheep grazed the marginal land, and because sugar beet were grown around here, they used to fold. After the sugar beet were harvested, the sheep would graze on the sugar beet tops, so that you'd make use of the what was left from the arable crops. But I think when the war came along, the government encouraged the farmers to plough every inch of ground up they could to grow corn, you know, to feed the country with, you know. So I think that was probably when sheep declined a bit in this area. They're probably coming back a bit now because of the environmental scheme, you know, the grazing on the stewardship land and that type of thing. But cattle have always been here. There's a lot of small herds, even little places with sort of 3 or 4 or 5 acres used to have a couple of cows, and there were quite a few places in the village that had, you know, 2 or 3 or perhaps half a dozen cows. And like now, where there's probably only one left, which is James Alston, and I think he's got probably over 200 cows now. He's the last one left.
And are
in
his
this
dairy or are
yes,
they
dairy cows, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, most, there was suckler cows. You didn't really hear suckler cows about here before that. Most of the beef that was produced came from the dairy herd. You know, the heifer calves from the dairy herd would be reared for replacements for the dairy cows. The beef, the bull calves would be reared for the beef, you know. So a lot of dairy farmers would rear their own beef as well, or they'd perhaps sell them on as calves, and someone else would buy the calves and rear them and take them on to finish for beef, you know. But suckler cows, purely for breeding calves for beef, never weren't heard of in those days. There was enough breeding cows and beef and bull calves from the dairy herd to supply the beef needs around here. But probably up until probably 30 years ago, I should think there was, or in the last 30 years, probably 1,000 cows in this area gone away, you know, not being milked anymore. There was 500 at Nettleshill, John Bush's. There was 300 at Laurie's farm, they went. Graham Marley, he had a couple of hundred cows, and David Scarfe had 70, and we had about 40 down here. So, you know, there's a lot of cows, milking cows in this area at one time, but they're all gone now. That hasn't been financially viable to carry on with them since milk quotas came in, and that's a specialist job now, and people such as James Alston, you know, they're very dedicated, and they're sort of double the yields of the individual cows. So where 200 cows now are given the milk of perhaps 400 cows years ago. The crops, arable crops wise, that's pretty similar, you know. Barley and wheat and sugar beet are the mainstay of the crops, you know. There's a bit of hay, upland hay grown, but not much. That's mainly, you know, hay has mainly got cut on stewardship land these days. It's put a new crop nowadays as the oilseed rape. You get that grown around here. You never used to see that, but that's a new crop. And I think one or two of the farms around here now started to grow vegetables, which we didn't get this far away from the fens. You know, that used to be growing on the fens. They're getting further out this way now.
And would that be potatoes? Or
potatoes, onions, carrots, parsnips, all those sorts of things, I think.
On quite big scale?
Yes, yeah, they're grown on, they either rent the land off farms. We don't do that, but, you know, some farmers are letting the land out for the vegetable growers to, I think, possibly the land gets diseased by growing vegetables on them continuous, so they keep moving further away from the fens to get, you know, disease-free land to grow the vegetables on. Irrigation's, you know, is a must for the vegetable growing though.
So now it's a question about farming and the changes of tools, horses and machinery. You won't remember horses.
Well, I can just about remember one, the last one that was here.
Was it used for ploughing?
No, we just used it for, that used to be used for bringing the cattle feed down here, fodder beet or kyle, and that used to fill the tumble up to take the muck away every day to put on the muck heap. Summertime, that was put in on the meadows down the flats with the beef cattle, and that would be left out there to graze all summer and then used wintertime for the use for the cattle, to bring the food to the cattle. But that was the only one I can remember.
And that would have been one of the Suffolk punches?
Yes, that would be a thing. Mm-hmm. But they were, we had horses about here before my time, and they were used for ploughing and all the farm work. Tractors.
The machinery's just got bigger, hasn't it? You wouldn't remember steam engines or anything?
No.
But,
No, I suppose when I started, I suppose the average size tractor then would be probably 55, 60 horsepower. And the biggest we've got now is about 120 horsepower, that's a small tractor in comparison compared with some of the big tractors. We do have quite a bit of work done these days by contractor, that's getting more specialised, some of the jobs are, and you need big machinery, and we can't justify that on a farm this size, so contractors do some of it, but the tractors have got bigger and bigger. We started off, I suppose, when I started work, maybe two furrow ploughs, they're now four furrow ploughs with a press on the back of that, so you can imagine it needs a lot of horsepower to pull them,
Have fields and hedgerows changed in your lifetime? I think they got bigger and then they've been putting some hedges back under stewardship, haven't they?
Yeah. We bought Grange Farm, that was in about the 80s, I think it was. There was some of the fields there were quite small fields, and we put on one bit there, we put four fields into one, and another field there, that used to be three fields, but other than that, this farm, there's one or two banks been knocked out, but not many trees or hedges have been taken out. They do get sort of blown, if you don't trim a hedge, they get too tall and eventually decay, don't they? But we've put one or two hedges in and quite a few trees. We've probably put a couple of hundred trees in since the 70s, not all in one go, but every now and again we've put a few in. So they're probably coming back a little bit, mainly due to government schemes or stewardship schemes, really. We now put about 400 yards of hedging along this Harling Road here, along the meadows here.
And wild flowers and the wildlife, do you think that's changed during your lifetime? Do you think there's been less variety of both?
There is in some ways and not others. I mean, when I was a youngster, you very, very rarely saw deer about here. Now, I know monkjack there, or rogue deer, and they're everywhere now. They're almost as bad as rabbits for being a pest, they are. But the monkjack I'm talking about there, the rogue deer and red deer, you never used to see many of those about, but there's quite a few now. I think possibly that's down perhaps to set aside. When set aside came in some years ago, there was places for them to lie undisturbed, possibly, I suppose, I mean, they tell me during the wartime years, the rabbits were run, all over the place about here. That was a big thing, rabbit warren or ferret, and in those days. I think they got thinned down to an acceptable level. They're coming. I think because of the stewardship schemes and the ESA schemes, they're coming back now. That's one of the problems of these schemes. The rabbits, they're difficult to get on top of those. But other things like I was a long while before I ever saw a green woodpecker, and now there's dozens of them. You see them every day. Now whether that's because of set aside or the stewardship scheme, that could be that. Because fields get left untouched for a number of years, and I think the green woodpeckers feed on insects from the ground. You often see them on those set aside fields, so they're increasing in numbers, and we're getting things like you never used to see oyster catchers. You see them now. We've got the common curlews down there, and I think I may have seen the first stone curlew this year, which I've heard that. The old boy saying about them being here during the wartime years, but if that was a stone kill, this will be the first one that's been about here since the wartime years. So I think because of the schemes, the ESI and stewardship schemes, there's more wildlife turning up now than there was 20 years ago. So I don't know whether that's because of these schemes or not, but I think that's what it is anyway.
Did you collect nuts, fruit, flowers, or anything else from the countryside? Did you get crab apples?
Yeah, we used to, I remember getting crab apples, and we used to go blackberry and that sort of thing. We got an orchard after moving down here. There's an orchard with the garden here, and one of my jobs in the autumn time was to get all the apples, and there was quite a lot of them. I reckon we probably had over a ton of apples, and we used to take them up to the granary, up steps in the building in the yard here, and there was some, lay some straw in some pens up there and store the apples up there. That was a big thing for the youngsters to do as well. But we used to, things like that were gathered, yes.
And how much woodland was there in the valley? And you talked about new trees being planted. Do you think there's more or less than there was, say, in the 60s and 70s?
Well, I think there was a lot of mature trees about here in the 60s, or from the wartime onwards up until the 60s, and as they got old and fell down or blew down or whatever, they weren't really replaced, I don't think. Whereas I suppose probably about the 70s we started to, or the government were encouraging people to put trees in, so I suppose we started putting them in then. So there's a gap of about, perhaps we should have been putting trees in 40 years ago. We've only been putting them in sort of 20 years ago, so there's a gap of a certain age group of trees not been, so we got a lot of trees sort of a foot round growing now, but there's not many sort of 50 year old trees about, shall I say. We got some lovely mature trees here still, but they don't last forever, do they? So there weren't a lot of tree planting went on a lot of years ago, apart from the bigger states, I suppose they did. But as far as woodlands go, I don't think there's many woodlands been cut down as such, and I think there's most farms around here, I think, have put a few bits of wood in. A lot of them are put in for shooting, I think, but the farms that had an organised shoot, they put small woodlands in for holding the pheasants, don't they?
Do you remember rabbits and other mammals and birds being hunted in the valley? You talked about rabbits being very plentiful in the Second World War, and maybe we ate more rabbit then.
I think that was a big, and that's probably just before my time, but just after the war, that was, I suppose the wages weren't that great, and people got a rabbit or a pheasant to live, didn't they? That was their Sunday lunch, probably, or weeknight lunch. But there were so many rabbits about them, and farmers encouraged people to go ferreting or whatever for the rabbits. That was just damaging the crops, you know. But rabbits then, I think, were worth quite a bit of money to sell, you know, if you'd got any excess rabbits after you'd taken the ones home for your table. Pheasants, I mean, that was a recognised thing. There was hardly any pheasants left about here. There were so many people, poachers after the pheasants, that there was probably 10 poachers after one pheasant in the end. But that was at a time when pheasants were worth a bit of money. But now pheasants are only worth, I don't know, 50 pence each, and nobody bothers about them anymore. There's plenty of pheasants and partridges about. I think last year we had 3 pairs of grey partridges about here. That's like we don't seem to get any more than that, but we're getting around about 3 pairs. One pair had about 19 hatch out last year.
That's very good, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's the most
so encouraging.
That's most of our. But the trouble is, I'm not sure what happens to them all, because you never get more than, as I say, we had about 3 pairs nest about here, but that's about all you get. So what happens to the youngsters, I don't know. Whether the fox gets them, there's plenty of foxes about.
Do you remember the Little Ouse River as a child? You said you went fishing.
Yes, I was always down there.
Swimming?
Messing about. Well, I didn't swim. I never used to like being in the water. I used to like being fishing beside the water. But people did go swimming down there. That was deep enough. Before that was dredged out and straightened in the 68 that was done. There was quite a few places where there was 3 foot of water and possibly even 4 foot on a deep corner, but the river wasn't as wide as it is now, and there's lots of bends and meanders in the river in those days. There was fallen trees across the river and plenty of places to hold fish. There were places in the Little Ouse where I can remember one stretch there was probably 100 yards was all completely from one side to the other with lilies, you know. That was a beautiful river in those days.
Do you remember watercress as well?
There was watercress down there.
Did you pick that ever?
No, I didn't, no. There was water voles in there, you often used to see them. And there were coipi rats down there as well. I mean, I think they are more or less eradicated now. I haven't seen one for a lot of years anyway, but they used to put the traps down there. And I have seen at least 7 or 8 in one go swimming down the river, coipi rats. Mm-hmm. But that was a lovely river. That was full of fish. There was ducks and that on there. But I mean, I think, I'm not sure the exact difference in level, but they lowered the water table down. I think some of it was dredging the soil away from the river, but some of it was by taking out the sluice gates in Gasthorpe and Riddlesworth and Nettleshill. They took the sluice gates out and I suppose lowered the water table that way. And that completely ruined the river as a fishery altogether, you know. And I think because the water levels are low, I'm not sure whether that's the only reason, but you get a lot of reed growing in the river now. The reed just completely suffocates the river now. But that's mainly, I think, because the river's only about 18 inches deep at the most. When the water's deeper, you don't get the reed growing so much, do you? It could be because of phosphates and that, but I don't think there's many meadows around here that get any fertiliser on at all now. I mean, we certainly haven't put any on for probably 15 years on our meadows anyway, and I don't think David Scarf did. You know, most of the meadows about here are in either ESA or stewardship schemes. I know that was an argument as to why the rivers have declined, but I don't think that's the case now anyway. But there's not a... There's hardly a fish left in the river now, but there are otters down there. There's a pair of otters down there, and there are mink down there, so that may be something to do with it as well.
And kingfishers?
There's kingfishers down there, but that's about the only fish you'll see down there. Are little sticklebacks and things like that, and because the kingfishers all have them. There's Well, most times I go down there every day of the week to check the cattle, and I suppose out of the 7 days, I'd probably see a kingfisher probably 3 or 4 days every week. You hear them before you see them, don't you? But if you've got a dog with you, or you're walking with somebody else and you're talking, you never see them because they're gone, aren't they? But because I'm on my own, when I would check the cattle, I often see kingfishers. But because I see them so often, I think there must be more than one pair down there. I think there's probably 2 or 3 pairs nest down there. And they've been down there consistently for years and years. There's always been kingfishers down there.
And do you remember how much of the valley flooded in summer or winter? Do you remember that happening regularly?
Yes, well, the worst flood I can remember was in 68. There've been quite a few floods since, but in 68 they dredged the river out, and my uncle used to go down there. His name was Mr. Moore, and he used to check the cattle every week, and they finished dredging it in September that year, and the chap went away with a machine, and he said to my uncle, "Hey, I said, I'll never flood again." And I think we had 2 days very heavy rain, and the whole river, the whole lot of the meadows had about 45 acres, but the whole lot was underwater.
A foot or more?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been a lot more than a foot, but you know, that was more or less completely underwater, and was just goes to prove that no matter how deep you dig the river or how wide you make the river, if there's enough water come down there, that will come over the top and flood whatever you do at the river, won't it? You know, and that is exactly what happened, and that happens, still happens now. You know, every now and again, probably not every year. Sometimes 2 or 3 times a year, that'll be half underwater, or occasionally completely underwater, but. Sometimes that'll only happen every other year, but you only want, you know, in winter time probably 2 or 3 days heavy rain, and that'll come up and come over the top of the. Quite often that comes out of the drinking places. Mm. But that's a natural thing. That's what the meadows are there for. They are flood meadows, aren't they? They're wet meadows, and that usually floods at a time. Well, nearly always floods at a time when there's no livestock on there. So flooding helps to keep the meadows in good condition. They're like a sponge, that brings the meadows up, and you know, to better keep them level, you know.
Do you remember the fens alongside the river? And did you play there as a youngster, or collect anything from the fens?
When you say the fen, you mean Galveston Fen, or the reed bed, you mean?
It's sort of the reed bed fens and...
Well, the reed bed that splits in between our meadows there. No, I never did really go in there much. We was always told as youngsters, don't you go in there, boy. If you go in there and go in one of those wet holes, you'll never get out again, you know. That's what you was always told. Well, that is a bit like that. That is quite boggy now. And if you... I dare say you could get stuck in up to your neck in... Well, that's not quicksand or anything. They're just wet pools in there.
But they used to,
I think the only thing we did do, perhaps, we did have a little shoot about here, probably in the 80s, I should think, round about then. And I think the chap used to hire the reed bed, and we used to meet up with him a couple of times a year, and we'd walk through the reed bed for pheasant shooting, you know. You'd need probably 3 or 4 people in the reed bed to brush the pheasants out, and the guns would stand on the meadows either side to shoot them. Apart from that, no, I didn't go in the reed bed. That wasn't much interest to me. I was more interested in the catch and fish from the river, you know, on the meadow banks. But the reed bed is a marvellous place for wildlife. That's full of wildlife in there. And I think that was sort of during the war years. They planted, the forestry bought the reed bed, and they planted poplar trees in there. Probably ruined it as a reed bed because... That stops the light getting to the reed and all that sort of thing. The reed doesn't grow as strong perhaps as it did before, but that's no ideal place for poplars to grow, of course. But as the poplars have got big, and they're very big now, they're getting top heavy and just toppling over. And I think as far as I know, they're not economical to get to cut down for, I think that was Maxwood they were growing for, that's what they were put in for, and I suppose there's not so much need for Maxwood anymore, and they're just left there to rot, you know. So it's more of a conservation area than an agricultural area now, but that is a marvellous place for wildlife. I mean, as buzzards get down there, and I believe there may be badgers in there, I'm not sure, and foxes get in there when it's dry. So it's a proper wildlife haven in there.
Do you remember any people digging peat from the fens?
No, I don't
that
know.
That would be some time
they'd
ago,
they'd be
really.
Going a long way
yeah.
back for that. Well, that's what those pools and well, that's how those pools are formed in there. I don't know. My back could well be how those little pools were formed in there, but that's going back a lot of years, I should think, when peat would have been dug. I think that wasn't that many years ago when reed was cut from there. That would be before the poplar trees were planted, which was during the wartime. Before that, I think people used to cut reed for, you know, for thatching. No, I can't. I've never heard anyone talk about peat digging from there.
And do you remember people getting wood, firewood, from down by the river?
Well, there's quite a few willow trees round by the river, and as they blow down or branches break off, you know, we trim those up and use that for firewood, but. We don't actually. I've never known anyone to coppice the trees. Like on the broads, they coppice the trees around. That's why they don't get top heavy, don't they? But I've not seen that done. But there's not many trees along those meadows now, and because they're difficult to manage and maintain. If you don't coppice them, then you can get a lot of trees blowing down, and you know you get one guileless that ruins your fencing and. Makes a lot of work, so on the broad you don't get many trees there, do you? That's apart from the ones that are poled beside the road more often than not, aren't they?
Do you remember people setting fire to the fens?
No, I can't remember setting fire to it, but I've heard of it being done, and apparently Redgrave Fen used to be done regularly, but I think they used to set fire to the fen down there, but I've never seen it catch fire. I mean, it's a dangerous old thing to do. You'd have to know what you were doing, I would imagine. I mean, I wouldn't even think that's a legal thing to do these days, is it? I mean, there was a time when everybody used to burn straw. We never did because we had livestock, but when the farms got rid of their livestock, burning the straw was an easy option, and that was done, but that's banned now because of because of the dangers of what can happen, and I would imagine the reed bed would be the same, but you'd have to be a brave man to stand in there and do that. You have to know what you're doing, I think, but that has been done, I believe, yes.
So you told me about reed and sedge cutting for thatching. Do you think it was sold as well from your fens, or was it only used on the local houses?
I wouldn't know that, but I wouldn't have thought that was sold. I would think the small amount of reed that was in there would have been used in the village, probably. I mean, a lot of the places that were thatched had, I mean, like on farm buildings, for instance, they had, when the thatch was needed replacing, instead of putting thatch on, they put tin roofs or asbestos roofs on the buildings. Some of the barns here were done that way, so there's no longer the need for thatch eventually. But I would imagine initially there was a lot of farm buildings and houses around here were thatched, and most of that thatch would have been needed in the village. I mean, obviously, you know, some of them in the next village may have wanted some, and there may have been an odd small amount sold, but I don't think that was a regular thing. Not as far as I've not heard of that happen anyway.
Do you remember any of the wet areas being drained or ploughed up? We talked about during the war they would have ploughed a lot of marginal land. But do you think any of that's happened since you've known?
Well, when we first came, not the wetland. I mean, our wetland. Well, I suppose some farms have attempted to plough meadows, such as the Flats Meadows, up. But we never have. I mean, that's, you know, on a wet year, your tract would just disappear. They can be very, very wet, you know. Even in the summertime, if you get an extreme amount of rain, which you can do sometimes. But that has been done on the Broads, hasn't it? You know, some of the meadows, well, a lot of the meadow ground has been ploughed up, well, last being turned back to grass again. Scarfe's Meadows, they have been ploughed up. I can remember those being ploughed up. That's gone back of some years now, but they were ploughed up purely to reseed the grass. They weren't ploughed up to change the crop, and you know, they weren't ploughed up to put wheat or barley in. They were just ploughed for, you know, to renew the grass seed on there. But they tell me what happens is when you reseed the meadows, the natural grasses eventually come back again. And I think that's what's happened on Scarce Meadows. Most of the grasses there are proper marsh meadow grasses, aren't they? So they're the only ones, the wet fields that have been ploughed up. But on this farm, on the heath, which is now grassland, that we put that into a heath and reversion in the ESA going back about 13 or 14 years ago. That used to be heath during the wartime years. As I said earlier about the government during the war, they wanted to plough every inch of ground up they could. Well, that was ploughed up, and that was farmed for barley mainly, a occasional crop of sugar beet and upland hay. But that was a field that was just marginal land, not really used, perhaps grazed with sheep before the war. And there's a couple of other bits on the farm in total, probably amounting to about 60 acres that was just heathland. And now, with the schemes, that's gone back to that way again, you know, because it's no longer viable to plough land like that. But that's not wetland, that would be very dry land, that would be.
Very sandy,
yeah, well, at Yarmouth Beach, that is.
Now, the next questions are all very specific about, have you heard snipe drumming on the fens?
Well, I don't know whether I've heard snipe drumming. I've seen snipe. They used to nest. Snipe used to nest down there. In fact, I think as teenagers, we used to try and shoot them, although you'd have to be a very good shot to get one of them. I can't remember ever hitting one, because they're too fast for me, but there was a lot of snipe about there, even on this front meadow next to Harling Road here, that there were snipe there quite often. But I don't really know what you mean about snipe drumming. What would that be then?
I think, I've not heard it, but I think it's their courtship noise.
Oh, right, yes.
So if they were nesting... nesting, you probably did have the drumming.
That's probably here, but I didn't take any notice, obviously, I would imagine. But they used to nest here, I'm sure. But they are back again. They're feeding down there. I'm not sure whether they're nesting down there yet, but there's certainly some down there wintertime feeding.
That's good. What about bitterns? Have you heard them booming?
No, I've never heard one of them yet. I've never heard of one being down the fen here, but I think, as far as I know, there was a pair, or there was bitterns only about less than half a mile away from our Flats Meadows, the far end from your meadows. There was some bitterns over there, I think. I think you'd class that as Gasthorpe, but in a straight line, that's less than half a mile away from our Flats Meadows. And I think they've been seen there. I think the twitchers came over there to have a look. So you never know, we could well get those in the fen at Garbolisham soon.
Mm-hmm. That'd be brilliant.
Yes, yeah.
Do you remember any other birds in the valley?
Well, as I say, we've got, a buzzard down there now. Well, that's probably because of the rabbits, perhaps. I mean, that's something I haven't seen, and you know, up until the last, they've been about here now the last sort of 5 or 6 years I noticed them. So that's, you know, I think the stewardship has helped them with things like that. The oyster catchers, they're getting more popular in a lot of places now, but there's oyster catchers down there. Common curlews, they're down there. I think they are nesting.
Oh, that's down lovely.
There. I'll say the stone curlew, I'm pretty sure I saw one of those. But, you know, and the woodpeckers, you know, you see a lot of those about now. I think that, you know, they're on the stewardship land. I think you get the little lesser spotted ones in the reed bed. I think Reg was telling me that's an ideal habitat for them in there. So, you know, there's a lot more, there's more wild bird life about now than there was sort of 20 years ago, I think. There was a time 20 years ago and before when that was, things were declining about here, weren't they?
Well, I think that's very helpful. You've told us lots of information. Oh, thank you very much,
that's
Brian.
That's okay, right. Well, that sounds terrible.